This is HPR episode 2088 entitled, How My Wife's Grandma Got Me Into Linux, and is part of the series, How I Found Linux. It is hosted by Nightwise, and is about 33 minutes long. The summary is, Nightwise tells us how his wife's 80-year-old grandmother got him into Linux.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello, Hacker Public Radio. This is Nightwise from Nightwise.com, calling in with the mandatory show if you're a regular host on Hacker Public Radio, and that is the How I Got Into Linux story. Well, I'll give you some background. I have been professionally active in computers since 1999, which puts me at about 17 years of being an IT professional. And in the years before I became an IT professional, I already was a computer enthusiast. I had the regular Commodore 64 and the Amiga, like every kid my age had. But after that, my interests for computers kind of waned away. It came back full force as I was studying to be an educator. I have a social studies background. And in order for the courses I was taking, I had to write reports. And for those reports, I needed a computer. So I got my computer as a present for school from my aunt, who bought me a Pentium 75 with, I think it was, those are, you know, megs of RAM. I think 16 megs of RAM or 8, I'm not really sure anymore. A 15-inch screen, a laser printer, an inkjet printer, and I think that was it. And I can remember a 750 megabyte hard drive. So that's how long ago it is. I used my computer for reports, writing reports. And I remember going to the computer shop nearby and picking out a model and asking the guy who sold it that I wanted the computer as long as he could give me the background image that they had on the computer in the store. And that was really funny because the wallpaper on the computer in the store was a screenshot of Deep Space Nine, which was taken with a TV tuner card, and that was set as the background. And I remember that thinking that was so awesome, I just had to have that. So they pre-installed Windows 95 on there, and I got the background, on which I found fantastic. And I spent the better part of the first half year of owning that computer playing around with it and messing with all kinds of things and writing my reports. Quickly, I got into this whole computer thing again, and it really interested me. And by then, I met my wife, then girlfriend. And I didn't know that at the time, but her dad was really into computers. And she told me this, you know, my dad's really into computers. And I thought, like, okay. And this was like the first time I ever set foot in her house. And, you know, there was her dad, and he looked very strict because he was a professor. And I went, like, okay. And you know, the second or the third time I came around, I kind of asked if he could possibly help me out, because I got me one of these tuner cards, TV tuner cards, and they didn't really work right, and if you could help me out. Sure, he said, you know, come by next week, bring your little CPU tower, and we'll go upstairs. So I fondly remember mounting the steps to the upstairs floor at my girlfriend's house at the time, and this door opening to my then not father-in-law's but now father-in-law's office, and he had like 14 computers just lined up, and it was like a Valhalla there, and he had CDs and discs and gear, and I didn't know what I was seeing. So we ended up spending the entire evening tinkering with my computer and reinstalling Windows and getting the drivers of my S3 video card right. That is how long ago it is. And the entire evening, my girlfriend just sat downstairs in the kitchen with her mom, waiting until her boyfriend came back down, because her boyfriend and her dad were tinkering with computers. And that was my first step into a world that would change my life forever. Because for my father-in-law, he finally had kind of like the son-in-law who was interested in computers, because he has three daughters. And I found this mentor that wanted to teach me things. So for the next couple of months, if not years, if I would, you know, visit my girlfriend, he would be like waiting at the door going like, okay, he's coming. And before I could say hello to my girlfriend, he would snatch me up and was like, let's geek out. And we would go upstairs and geek out and play with computers. And that is how I learned. I learned to install Windows computers. I learned to install Windows 95, Windows 98. He had all these Wear CDs, and it was awesome. I learned so much. It came up to the point that the day that I graduated from school as an educator, so that's actually kind of a loose translation of a caretaker who works with mentally disabled people in the social sector. So the day I finished school, I got a phone call from that computer shop where I got my first computer, because that computer shop was very good. My father-in-law was very good friends with that computer shop, and he took me along on Sunday mornings to help out in the technical department to help fix computers. So I had been doing this internship in the computer store on Sunday morning, where I could go and help out fix computers because my dad-in-law would take me with him. And that's how I got into computers. And the day I finished school, I got a phone call from the computer shop. They rang me up and they said, do you want to come and work here? And I said, yes. Went into computers and never looked back. It wasn't until 1999 I got a first taste of Linux. I was then working as a junior network administrator, which was basically the help desk guy, at a multimedia company, which had a video editing department, an engineering department, and a games testing department. And I was the IT guy for all of these departments. And it was awesome. It was really, really awesome. And I had all these, you know, geeky dudes that worked there. And at a certain point, we were having an issue where we had to loan out software a lot for people to install stuff, because it was all done manually back then. And, you know, people would come borrow the CDs at the IT department, wouldn't bring them back, and it was kind of a mess. So we thought, there has to be another way to kind of distribute this across the network. And I remember that we had this big SCSI tower, this tower of SCSI drives. And you could hook it, SCSI CD-ROM drives, sorry, like 10 of them. And they were used to burn 10 CDs at once. But we could also use them to kind of, you know, read 10 CDs at once. So this engineering guy that worked with us, we got talking about this. And he said, well, we can do this with Linux, because he was really into Linux. And I went like, what the hell is Linux? He said, like, it's like an operating system. And I remember that we had some Linux lying around, because the first time I saw the command line was looking at the old Spark stations, the pizza boxes that they had there to do some video encoding. This was the company, by the way, that invented, I kid you not, the department that invented the CDI, the CD Interactive from Philips. These guys invented this, I shit you not. And if you don't know what a CDI is, well, the CDI is the basis for an interactive CD-ROM or DVD as we know it today in PlayStation and Xbox technology. That was kind of the first steps in that technology. So they came up with the CDI. So that department worked there. They had all these geeky engineers. And we got talking about making this, turning this DVD tower with these 10 CD-ROM drives, or CD tower with these 10 CD-ROM drives, into a software library. And the guy said, yeah, we can do that with Linux. So I thought, like, Linux, that's like on the Spark stations, you know, I don't know anything about that. What is that? He said, I'll show you. So he came down with this install CDs. It was like a folder with about 10 of them. And he came down with SUSE, and I thought it was SUSE 4 point something. I can't remember. And he would, you know, start the graphical installation. I went like, wow, what's that? He said, like, you know, it's an operating system, and it comes with all these apps. You know, these applications. It's all included. It's all for free. And I went like, what do you mean? It's all free. And it's all on these CDs, so you don't have to, you know, download it or buy it. No, it's all on there. And I said, like, wow. So we did the first install, and he asked me, he said, like, you know, what do you want to install? And I remember distinctly answering him, everything. So we ended up doing the first installation of that SUSE with everything. Yeah, we went through the 7 CDs, and it installed every single application that you could get. So we ended up with this, I think it was at the time a KDE desktop, which when you clicked on the menu, it would just expand with applications that you could open. And I remember going through them all. Well, not all of them, but mostly all of them. I literally spent hours trying to figure this out, what this was. And that's the first time I ever saw Linux, because what we used that machine for was as a CD-ROM library that people could access over the network. So he showed me how Samba worked, and I didn't understand. And then he showed me the command line. I didn't understand that. But I was fascinated by this graphical desktop that could do all these crazy things. And that's how I got into Linux. So pretty soon, I started experimenting with Linux myself. And I distinctly remember going to the computer bookshop and buying the box, which came with a book. And I remember reading the book and doing the installs and trying to get Linux to work. Now, hardware support at that time, because I was using this standard, you know, PC tower with, like, I don't know, a Sound Blaster and an Hercules video card. It was very good. So mostly everything worked out of the box. Sometimes I had some trouble with a network card, but I got some old Tricom network cards from my boss. And, like, you know, use this one, these work. And I play around with it. It was fascinating. But every now and then I would just run into this boundary where, for example, I couldn't get Flash to play, or I couldn't get an MP3 to play. And then this wonderful system was, like, not really working for me. So I started distro hopping, as you do. So I think one of the next distros that I found was Nopix, which I found amazing because it ran off a CD and it ran on everything. So I played around with Nopix a lot. And then I came into one Linux distribution. I had a Toshiba laptop at the time that would really start to work for me. And that was College Linux. It doesn't exist anymore. I think it was based on Nopix, which was based on, I don't know, Debian or RPM. I'm not really sure. And I played around with College Linux, and I could get it came prepackaged with you know, software that you could really use, like it was like college software to manage your money and to do some text processing, word processing, and stuff like that. So, and it had these cool names. It was called the distros were called like Darth Vader Edition and Skywalker Edition. And then I would, you know, start to track when a new edition of College Linux would come out and install that on my laptop and try to get everything working. And that was my first introduction into partitioning and stuff. So yeah, that, it went on like that for quite a while. And then I got hold of Mandrake Linux, which was also pretty interesting because it came with all these applications and it had a little bit more support for third-party stuff like Flash and stuff out of the box. It was kind of cleaner than the first versions of SUSE I played around with. And I remember installing that and playing around with that. And I distinctly remember first trying to dual boot and then going back to Windows all the time. And then, you know, sometimes really die-harding it and just wiping my drive, putting Linux on it and saying, I'm going to go for it. I'm not going to distro hop. I'm going to see if I can get this working. And getting frustrated after a while and then throwing it off and throwing something else on it. And, you know, how do you mess around with Linux? By then, I was very slowly getting into podcasting. I had discovered podcasting back in 2000 and, let me see, three or something. It was at the very, very dawn of podcasting. I remember one of the proto-podcasters that was out there, the Daily Source Code by Adam Curry, was like in episode 40 or something. And I caught on to it and I started hanging out with these guys and sending in feedback and starting to record my first podcast in the car and stuff like that. So, yeah. And I remember one day listening to a fantastic podcast of the day that was called Slashdot Review by Andy McCaskey, where Andy would read the headlines from Slashdot every day. And it was so cool. I am so sad that doesn't exist anymore, because that, to me, was one of the greatest podcasts to stay informed, to listen to on my way to work on my first generation iPod. So that was nice. And he mentioned this Ubuntu, or Ubuntu, I don't know how you... And he mentioned it a couple of times, Ubuntu. And I thought, like, all right, this Ubuntu thing sounds interesting, so let's give it a try. And I did. And I installed Ubuntu on one of my machines, and lo and behold, what was that? It worked. I managed to get stuff working. And then I found this online script. I can't remember the name of it right now. But it was this first auto-install script that would install the right codecs and MP3 and third-party software automatically. And I remember in the beginning, people used to breathe fire when you installed that. They said, like, it's bad and the repositories are not updated and you shouldn't do that and this and that. And I went like, wow, this is fascinating, because for the first time I had a system that I could actually use. So I started playing around with this Ubuntu more and more, and it became more and more a part of my workflow, because I started to notice that I didn't have to roll back to my Windows machines that often. By that time, I also got my first Mac, and I was starting to hang out kind of 50-50 on Ubuntu and on my iBook. And I found it really interesting, and it was really starting to work. Back then, we still had terrible problems with stuff like Wi-Fi being supported and stuff, but we found ways around that by plugging in wired network cards or PCMCIA cards that you knew were supported, and there were just a few, so whenever I got it working, I would be so happy. And that's how I kind of played around with it. Linux played a pivotal role in Nightwise.com, because by then I started to blog, and I posted some articles on the website, and that was kind of it. And one day, my wife's grandmother, who was like 76 at the time, or a little bit older even, I think she's 83 now, she would be 77 years old, and she had this computer, because, you know, my wife's family was pretty geeky, and she always had this little arcade video game, this handheld arcade video game, Tetris, that you like to play, and that broke. So my dad-in-law dove into his office and got out one of these insanely old Linux laptops, IBM laptops with Windows 95 and a couple of games, and he gave it to her, and she played Patience on that, and Minesweeper and stuff like that, and she really liked it, but it broke. So we needed to find her a new machine. And I thought, like, you know what? I am going to find an old laptop. I had one lying around. I'm going to set up Ubuntu on it. I'm going to install the games that she likes. And I'm going to configure it so that it's very easy to operate. And I did. Pure out of, you know, an experiment, because my grandmother-in-law love to play with computers, and I thought, like, oh, there's Ubuntu, it has a lot of games on it, you can, you know, work on that one. So I installed it, and it was an old Pentium 3 compact laptop, if I remember correctly, and I think it was Ubuntu 6.04, 5.05, 08, I don't know, 5-something. I installed it for her. I used the special script that would install all of the codecs and the extra software, and I just gave it to her. And I remember taking some screenshots because I thought it was a cool project, and she loved it. She literally played all night on this thing. She would, you know, we would go over on a Sunday, and she would say, like, man, I've been playing Hamburger Time or Burger Time until 3 o'clock in the morning. And this Tux Racer thing is really addictive. So I suddenly had this 76-year-old gran who was addicted to Linux. And that was cool. So I thought, you know what, I'll blog about it. I blogged about it, and I posted it on Dig. I remember posting that on Friday evening. I posted it to Dig, and I thought, I forgot about the blog post. And on Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, I got a phone call. And it was my my hosting provider for my website. And he said, "Dear Mr. Nightwise, do you plan on continuing the load on your website, or do the other websites that are also hosted on this share platform also get a chance to be accessed by the internet today? Because, quite frankly, the visits to your website are blowing our servers away." I went like, what the hell is going on? Back then, I had like 10 visitors to my site a day. You know, nobody knew me. I made it in Dreamweaver or something. I don't know. So I thought, like, what the hell is going on? So I looked at my stats, and I thought, oh, look, my stats broke. Because, you know, yesterday there's this teeny bar, and today there's this big bar, and this big bar says that there are 9,000 visitors which have visited my website overnight. I got to the front page of Dig with my article called Ubuntu for Your Grandmother. And that kind of, you know, I got linked through by Debian. Debian.org linked to my website. So that was like my Google juice was immediately validated for the rest of my life. And it was awesome. I went like, wow, what the hell is going on? And there were like comments and articles. And suddenly there was this big brouhaha about this one article, Ubuntu for Your Grandmother. And that's where it took off. So Ubuntu became my distro of choice, and I have been using it for forever. Either using Ubuntu on PCs, and once I got a Mac, I thought, you know, I can do Ubuntu on this. I started tinkering with getting Linux on your Mac, and I kind of became a go-to guy for some of the podcast community when it came to that. So I played around with running Ubuntu on my iMac, which looked awesome, and I didn't distro hop a lot. I might have, you know, tried different desktops and played with Mint, but I mostly, you know, stayed on Debian derivatives. Not because I'm a fanboy or anything, but just because it worked for me, and that is my philosophy. Technology has to work for you instead of the other way around. So any distro that would, you know, require you to spend hours and hours and hours and hours getting it to work is not something that I really like to use. I just need something I can really use and I can play with. And that's how Ubuntu really started to work for me, first as a desktop, then as a server, because I found out I could do things with SSH and with the command line, and I could script things, and I could find out all of these cool things. I got on IRC again, met a lot of cool people there, and that's how I kind of got into Linux and have remained into Linux ever since. So fast forward to today, where the number of computers I have has decreased. I used to have like 5 or 6. Now I only have like 3. And the role that Ubuntu is playing, that Linux is playing in my life, has also significantly changed. It used to be an experimental platform, and I would used to try to do as much on Linux as I could, but if it didn't work, I didn't mind. But that kind of changed when I got my own company. I started my own company 2 years ago, and I thought, you know what? I want to know if I can do this using some cloud software and a Linux machine. So I got me a Lenovo Twist, ThinkPad Twist, installed Ubuntu on it, and started to use it as my main machine to start up my company. And 1 year later, I was still using that laptop, and I had started up my entire company on a Linux machine. And that's when I started to see that Linux had fundamentally changed for me, where it was no longer a hobby project, but something that I would actually and really use. So that was pretty cool, because last year I ordered my first actual pre-installed Linux laptop, which was my Dell XPS 13, which came pre-installed with Linux. That was also a big step for me. And I have been using that laptop ever since for my job. So I have to rely on this crap. So in that way, my journey to Linux is perhaps different than other people's journey to Linux, where many of the Linux enthusiasts have the luxury of going like, yeah, we're going to do, you know, we believe in free software, and I believe in free software, and we believe in the fact that you should only use free software and you cannot use binary blobs or stuff like that. Look, I don't believe in that kind of stuff, because for me, this, it just has to work. And if I have to use a proprietary driver to get my video card to work, then so be it. I'll use a proprietary driver. I'm still using a free operating system, and I'm sharing my knowledge about that with the rest of the world, as I'm doing right now. And I don't care if it's not 100%, if it's not 100% Stallman proof, or it doesn't sit well with Jonathan Nadeau, with whom I've had the most delightful conversations about this topic. I'm not a purist. I am a pragmatist. I'm pragmatic. If it works, it works. So I've also stepped away from all these discussions like it has to be, you know, this Linux distro versus that Linux distro. I don't care, as long as it works. You know, I'm sticking to Ubuntu because I know how that works. I should play around with Red Hat or Fedora. I can, perhaps, one day. But right now, it works for me. I think that getting Linux to do what I want and spending time on that is, to me, far more important than spending time on trying out one certain distro versus the other, because there are, well, ideological differences between the Debian and the RPM side of the pond. I don't believe in that kind of ideological difference. I've never been one with these discussions that used to go on like, yeah, you shouldn't use the command line, you should use the command line, you can't use the graphical interface, the graphical interface is for losers. You know, those kind of stuff, these discussions that we used to have Usenet, sorry, it's so long ago. I don't believe in that either. I went like, does it work for you? Then it works for you. Do you want to click 2,000 times? And is that more convenient? Then do it. Or do you want to write a script that just repeats the same line of code 2,000 times? Whatever works. You know, my rsync backups, I do them via the command line because it's easy and I can script them. But I am not going to resize a single JPEG versus, you know, using the command line with a command that is longer than the first 3 chapters of the, I don't know, the Old Testament, just because I'm a command line kind of guy. I love my command line, but if a graphical user interface is faster, I'll use that. I love the command line just because of the fact that it's neat. It's not very distractive, and you can run it anywhere. So that's my vision on that. So I'll round up with where I am in Linux today. Let me see. So I have the Dell XPS 13 running 16.04. I only run long-term support versions of Linux, of Ubuntu, because I don't want to distro hop all the time. As I said, I rely on this thing. I can do my entire podcast production on Windows, on Linux, and on the Mac. So I can use Linux as a full-time podcast production platform and run my company. I have an IT consultancy company. I can do that all on Linux. I use OpenOffice software on all three platforms instead of relying on Word. I try to have the workflows of my company completely aligned towards cross-platform friendly software. So that being LibreOffice. There you go. I have two Raspberry Pis. Which one of them is kind of my remote in server. I have a home server running Linux 14.04, which runs my Plex, which runs my scripts, which runs Sonar, and which is a very important part of my daily IT infrastructure, which is an essential part of my home network. I have an Android phone, if that counts as Linux. I have Windows phone. Of course, I don't have a Windows phone. Only four people have a Windows phone on the planet, and not one of those four. I have a Ubuntu phone, first generation, which I think is an interesting item, but which is not ready for prime time yet. I had been thinking about getting the Meizu tablet, but thinking that I'm possibly not gonna do that. And that's basically it. So I try to play around with Linux a lot in VMs. I have come to a phase in my life where I don't distro hop anymore, and that saves me a lot of time and makes me very productive, because I find out ways to do things with the tools that I have and finding how to, you know, get it done instead of switching from one distro to the other all the time, because the cool kids say you have to be on that and the cool kids say you have to be on that. So I don't really care about that. And that is my journey to Linux. My journey to Linux has been going strong for 17 years now, from my first encounters and very amateuristic efforts and forays into the Tux world, to a moment where I use Linux on a daily basis. My wife uses Linux on a daily basis, not as a desktop. I did put Elementary on her iMac once, and she liked it. But as a, I use it on a daily basis. My wife uses it on a daily basis as our home server. We have some Raspberry Pis at home. I use Android, and I have my Linux machine, my laptop, my XPS 13. Which I take to work with me to do my consultancy gig on, so it's really reliable. And Linux has matured, both on the graphical side and on the support side, to something that I really enjoy using. The community has grown up, and I'm very glad with that as well. I'm not a developer. I can't write extensive bash scripts, but I'm an advocate. I'm not a religious advocate, an ideological advocate. I'm just a pragmatist that says, like, if that works for you, then that works for you. So that has been my journey into Linux. If you want to find out more about how I work in my cross-platform world, the philosophy of the Nightwise.com podcast is hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks, people who are on Windows, Mac, iOS, Android, Linux, or Sun Solaris, or whatever. Check it out, www.knighthwise.com. You can subscribe and get the podcast that I do on a fairly regular basis on whatever podcatcher that you're using. Until then, let technology work for you instead of the other way around, and I will hope to see you again in the feed for Hacker Public Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.